Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mthanga Nyahuye.
And here are our top stories this evening.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai fumes as local government minister suspends Harare mayor.
In view of the minister's threats to the council in Harare, the MDC is mounting an urgent application to the High Court for an interdict to stop the minister's action and protect the elected council from this predatory action.
Opposition parties criticize President Mugabe for attending what they call a low-key United Nations event in New York.
For our leader to be off on all these trips and leave the country in uncertain hands is really not justifiable at all.
The United States Agency for International Development has unveiled an additional $20 million for alleviating hunger in Zimbabwe.
We appreciate what has come in. It will go a long way in alleviating our food deficit. We really appreciate this gesture.
And we take a closer look at what happened to Zimbabwe 36 years after independence.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, is expected to take local government minister Xavier Kasukwere to court following his threats to remove elected councillors and replace them with state-appointed commissioners. This comes at a time when Kasukwere has suspended City Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni for alleged insubordination. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi reports from the capital.
Kasukwere today suspended Manyenyeni on allegations of insubordination and disobeying the minister over the council's appointment of James Mshore as the city's town clerk. Manyenyeni confirmed that he received a suspension letter signed by Kasukwere, the minister who has threatened to appoint a special commission to run the affairs of the Harare City Council, has provoked the ire of the MDCT that now wants to take him to court. MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai told a news conference that his party was now going to court to seek an interdict against Kasukwere. Tsvangirai accused Kasukwere of politicizing a matter that was merely administrative, adding that the minister's actions were tantamount to interfering in the operations of the city council.
In view of the minister's threats to the council in Harare, the MDC is mounting an urgent application to the High Court for an interdict to stop the minister's action and protect the elected council from this predatory action. We acknowledge that the judiciary has been consistent with the issue of non-interference by the minister in the affairs of elected council.
The Harare City Council said the appointment of Mshore as town clerk was above board. At the time of going to air, Studio 7 was failing to reach Kasukwere for a comment. In another council-related development, some street traders staged a demonstration at townhouse complaining that municipal police were violating the law by continuously confiscating their goods. One of the protesters, Tichawana Chifamba, accused municipal police of retaining the confiscated goods and sharing them among themselves.
Now we are angry because of the council. Council workers, they come and take our goods where we are selling, like tomatoes, apples.
National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe chairperson Sten Zorwadza said vendors are forced to operate in the city due to the current harsh economic environment in the country.
What we are seeing is just a total breakdown of an economy from the leaders who are senseless, leaders who are heartless, and leaders who have no view at all on how to cushion their own citizens. And municipal police officers who are corrupt.
Before receiving his suspension letter, Mayor Manyenyeni had told the vendors to put their grievances in writing, ahead of a meeting with them tomorrow.
What we are getting is maybe 5-10 different things that they are complaining about. One of them, they have petitioned council before and we have not responded. They are also that the people with disabilities are suffering in terms of how they are treated. There does seem to be also an indication that female vendors are not being well handled in their relationship with our enforcement teams. And I'm also hearing a sense of the economic plight, which seems to be driving them onto the streets and the need to be vending to take care of their families.
Just after the vendors had left townhouse, heavily armed police details arrived at townhouse looking for them. Meanwhile, some members of the Occupy Africa Unity Square pressure group failed to stage a protest for the second day running after police dispersed all the people who were arriving at the protest venue. They wanted to protest against the assault of Pastor Zamara by suspected state security agents during the main independence celebrations held at the National Sports Stadium on Monday. Pastor Zamara, the brother of abducted political activist Itai Zamara, was assaulted after staging a one-man demonstration complaining that Zimbabweans were not free despite the country marking its 36th independence anniversary. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Some opposition parties in Zimbabwe have castigated President Robert Mugabe for visiting America to attend a climate change event when the country is facing serious economic problems. They say Mr. Mugabe should have sent a ministerial team to attend the signing ceremony of a Paris Agreement on Climate Change convened by the United Nations in New York. One of the critics is Marceline Chikasha, president of the African Democratic Party, who says President Mugabe should stop attending such events and concentrate on the drought that is currently ravaging the nation and other problems. According to the state-controlled Herald newspaper, President Mugabe left Harare last night for the meeting and was accompanied by a high-level delegation that included Environmental Minister Opamu Chinguri and several other senior state officials. The Paris Agreement will be signed Friday and follows the COPAC Paris meeting held in France last year. Efforts to get comment from presidential spokesperson George Charamba were fruitless. Chikasha gives us her view on the issue.
I think at a time when the country is faced with so many challenges, we've got a cash crisis, we've got a drought, we have massive company closures, and for our leader to be off on all these trips and leave the country in uncertain hands is really not justifiable at all. The level of this meeting just requires a minister. What we need right now is leadership that cares about the people. To leave people when they are faced with so many challenges shows a deliberate and uncaring leadership style, which is what we are trying to fight as the opposition. We need to answer to the people. We need to be responsible enough to address the challenges that the people are facing, such as the cash crisis, the drought. People have no food at the moment. There's no medicine in the hospital. There's no answer to the cash crisis. There are no jobs. So there are 101 things on the to-do list of the president. And the last thing he should be doing right now is taking a trip to such a low-level conference such as this one. We really think that it's out of order.
But some of your critics will say also that it's important for the president to be well informed by what is happening in climate change, especially when you look at the drought is being blamed on climate change and other issues also in the country. So shouldn't he be at one of these meetings where there are 155 countries that are expected to sign at this Paris Agreement?
I don't think he needs to be informed at meetings such as these. What he needs to do is have competent people in those positions. You see, if you make political appointments to such important ministries, you will not be briefed and you'll find that you have to be everywhere yourself.
That was Marceline Chikasha, president of the African Democratic Party, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Meanwhile, some teachers are planning to go on strike as schools prepare to open for the second term, saying the government is not taking care of their needs. This comes at a time when President Mugabe said on Monday the government will do all it can to ensure that salaries of civil servants are pegged on the nation's poverty datum line of about $540 per month for a family of six living in an urban area. President of the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Obed Masarure, tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri they are fed up with the president's empty promises.
We are demanding certainty on pay dates. We are demanding utilization of the 7.5% deduction. We are also demanding that teachers be allowed to go on leave when they have accumulated enough leave days. We are also demanding a compensatory rural allowance for all the rural teachers. And we are saying to the government, the 15 billion that we are told was realized in Chiazwa and is still to be identified where it is must be dispensed to the citizenry, and the agency sector must get 20% in line with the Dakar Declaration.
We heard President Robert Mugabe pledging that his government will match civil servant salaries with the poverty datum line. What's your take on this or your reaction?
We have heard such rhetoric from 2018 when he was seeking the mandate to run this country. One of his many promises that he would choose to make and to mislead the people of Zimbabwe. To us, it's a lie. I think we've run out of things to say, and obviously we see the bulk of participants in the independent event being chosen to lie as we did last year when he promised them bonuses.
What form of demonstration are you going to use?
We are going to march and present our demands. We will petition Parliament, we will petition the public service, and we will also petition the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education.
That was Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe President Obed Masarure on the phone from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Presidential spokesman George Charamba was not reachable for comment.
The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, today unveiled an additional $20 million in funding towards the World Food Program's humanitarian efforts to alleviate hunger in Zimbabwe. USAID Zimbabwe Mission Director Stephanie Funk said the United States was committed to working with the World Food Program to meet the immediate need of vulnerable Zimbabweans, while WFP Country Director Eddie Rao hailed the generous contribution, which he said will enable his organization to continue food assistance to 450,000 people in 12 districts over the next 6 months. United Nations Communications Specialist Sirak Grebohoti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that $20 million will go a long way towards food insecure areas as the situation continues to deteriorate in the country.
As you may recall, the United Nations has been working together with the government, and we've come up with a UN response plan to mitigate this effect of the drought and support around 2.8 million people who are being affected by this drought. We've been working together with all our partners, including USAID. So the UN has come up with 360 million humanitarian response plan. And this latest additional support from USAID is in response to this UN prepared humanitarian response plan.
We are seeing a high number of children, nearly 100,000 under the age of 5, estimated to be acutely malnourished. What are you doing about this?
The humanitarian response plan that has been put in place follows a sectoral approach, including the nutrition component. So we have a big chunk of the humanitarian response dedicated to address this worsening malnutrition case. So we are providing supplementary and therapeutic feeding in the most affected areas through UNICEF and other non-governmental organizations.
Lastly, have you been able to get enough funding for your projects, or you are still asking for more assistance?
We are asking for more assistance as we stand at the moment. The response plan covers the period of March 2016 to April 2017. And as I have indicated, we are calling for $360 million, out of which so far we've received from development and humanitarian partners, including USAID, around 36 million. So you can imagine the gap we are encountering. And we are working hard with all our partners to mobilize the remainder, $224 million, between now and April 2017.
That was United Nations Communications Specialist Sirak Gebrewot on the line with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. His sentiments were echoed by humanitarian expert Everson Ndlovu.
We appreciate what has come in. It will go a long way in alleviating our food deficit. We really appreciate this gesture. You appreciate that already Zimbabwe has no food reserves. Whatever food is coming in is imported by individuals. So when that lump sum, or if you can access part of that money, we surely are going to import sizable amount of food that will see us go for quite an elongated time.
Some 100,000 children nationally are characterized as acutely malnourished. How disturbing is this?
Malnourished children are stunted children. That's what develops. They grow up stunted. Stunted children have challenges with their health because their immune system is already compromised due to lack of food. So they are easily attacked by various diseases that can easily be cured, meaning that the child then becomes chronically ill. Number three, such children have mental challenges. Their brain does not develop to its maximum. So this is what you tend to get from malnourished children. They don't grow up into fully nourished, fully or totally grown adults.
Humanitarian expert Everson Ndlovu on the line with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo. Meanwhile, a UNICEF delegation today came face to face with the horrors of hunger during a tour of clinics and hospitals in Kariba District. A foreign correspondent traveling with the team told Studio 7 they saw malnourished children admitted at Kariba Hospital. The UNICEF assessment continues to rural Kariba tomorrow.
Coming up,
Zimbabweans living in the diaspora speak out on the country's independence.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Billionaire Donald Trump and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton won yesterday's presidential primaries in the northeastern U.S. state of New York, extending their leads over rivals trying to end the Republican and Democratic nominations.
Thousands of families trapped between Islamic State extremists and Iraqi forces in the city of Fallujah are being forced to eat rotten food and soup made of grass.
U.S. President Barack Obama has met with Saudi Arabia's King Salman in Riyadh amid increasingly tense relations and persistent differences over how to combat terrorism and regional conflicts.
The failure of South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar to return today to Juba, the second delay this week, is putting a peace deal at risk, according to the international monitors.
And voting opened today for fans around the world to choose names for two baby eagles whose parents have nested in a tulip poplar tree at the U.S. National Arboretum in Washington. Mr. President and the First Lady, as they have been dubbed, are the first bald eagle pair to nest in this location since 1947.
The recently held town hall discussion hosted by Studio 7 on the way forward for Zimbabwe here at VOA revealed deep-seated concern from citizens who have left the country, but still very much connected and vested in the country's future. Studio 7 Dimiyake Mwakaliele explains.
From the Zimbabweans on the panel, Reverend Dr. Isaac Mwase and entrepreneur Sibongile Sidile Sibanda, to those in the audience, mostly Zimbabweans in the diaspora, discussion was rife with ideas about the way forward for Zimbabwe. Reverend Mwase, a Baptist minister and educator who believes ZANU-PF and President Robert Mugabe should be engaged in all discussions on the country's future as the elected government, noted the diaspora's keen interest in their country.
It's exciting to see that people are concerned and that Zimbabweans outside of the country, those that are here in America, they are engaged fully.
Dan Moyo, the North America representative for the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, said for true democracy to take hold in Zimbabwe, nothing short of a total uproot or removal of ZANU-PF would do.
As long as there's not democracy, as long as there's that continuation of oppressing people's viewpoints and not allowing them democratic space, as long as elections are not credible because of the government choosing how to register people, how to carry out the election, and how to monitor the votes. We need the people of Zimbabwe to demand international monitors so that the process can be credible. In the diaspora, we need Zimbabweans to vote as well, because it's a fundamental citizen right to vote.
But Doug Coltart, a Zimbabwean lawyer based in Washington and the son of a prominent Zimbabwean lawyer and former legislator of the MDC led by Professor Welshman Ncube, argued that the attainment of true democracy in Zimbabwe is bigger than a substitution of one party for another.
I don't think that will come simply by changing a ZANU-PF government with another party, just like that. I think there's a fundamental problem in Zimbabwe from the top to the bottom, where we don't have a democratic culture where we respect the views of all people.
Friends of Zimbabwe too weighed in on the debate, with Obi Egbuna, the U.S. correspondent for the Herald newspaper, challenging panelist Staff Director Chris Simpkins of the U.S. House of Representatives about U.S. efforts to effect regime change in Zimbabwe, saying America should stay out of Zimbabwe and Africa's affairs.
Continuing to echo the sentiments that Zimbabweans will do what is in the best interest of Zimbabwe, it is up to them, it is up to Africa to stand by them, and all agents outside of Zimbabwe, outside of Africa, working for regime change should be met with the fullest resistance possible.
But Simpkins rejected the accusations that the U.S. is attempting to change Zimbabwe's government.
There's a great deal of frustration among people in the diaspora. They're not sure whether or not the United States is helping or not helping. They want to know, how do we feel about the government? And the message that I would like to leave is that the United States government is not an enemy of Zimbabwe, but we've seen some things happen that are self-destructive on the part of the government. And we'd like to see that the government can make a change, that it can allow people to choose the leaders that they want. We don't have a vote in Zimbabwe, nor should we.
Gidigidi, mbuyane handa. Mbuyane handa, makewa. Who am I, comrade? Show me my brother, my sister, friends, family. Here in America, who am I, comrade? Here in the diaspora.
Pan-African poet Tsitsi Madzongwe, who opened the town hall with a poem backed by American mbira player Joy Schumann, said she too was impressed by the open discussion, but stressed the need for patience to let real change happen in Zimbabwe.
Change doesn't happen overnight, but it is our responsibility as people in the diaspora to work towards that change.
As the conversation continues on the way forward for Zimbabwe, under no dispute among the Zimbabweans in the diaspora was the love for their country and its rich culture. Reporting for Studio 7 from Washington, this is Ndimyake Mwakalielie.
Now it's time for the Youth Forum. It's time to change. I beg your pardon. It's time to engage with the reporter Chioniso Jani.
Hello, Zimbabwe. Good evening. This is Chioniso Jani, your host for Let Us Engage. Today, we have Evans Zininga, and he'll be talking to us about contract farming. Good day, Mr. Zininga.
I'm very well, thank you, and how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What is involved in contract farming, and is it big business for us youth to get into?
Contract farming is basically an instrument used by corporate companies that require agricultural products as raw materials for their various needs to acquire as much as they can get from the farmer through supporting them with the input, with technical know-how, and management of their cash flow. That way, it leaves them with a win-win situation where the farmers produce with a guaranteed market and where they know what price they're going to sell their product at prior to going into the season. At the same time, it guarantees the companies that require product off access to their product at the end of the season. And yes, it is big business, depending from which angle you're looking at it from, because as long as it is managed well, then everybody tends to benefit in a big way.
Tell us, where can we go as youth if we want to acquire skills for contract farming?
There are quite a number of companies that are promoting and supporting contract farming, but the biggest target should be the processors, because they take large volumes at a time and they also seem to pay better than the fly-by-night contractors that are coming along.
With the El Nino drought that we're going through, which products would be the best right now to venture into?
Food becomes a very major high-value commodity on the market, where if you are going to go into shorter season product, for example, vegetables, you won't go wrong because the cycle is shorter, so you get to sell faster, and everybody is looking at an opportunity to buy because there is not enough on the market. That allows you to compete with a bigger market and a higher market.
How can the youth benefit from the government funds allocated to contract farming?
It's always a good thing that government comes up with all these possibilities and facilities to grant farmers an opportunity to farm better and get that financial support that they require all the time. But unfortunately, the youth are always the last to benefit from these endeavors. I would say the youth should find a better way of advocating for more acknowledgement and also proving their worth to the system so that they can get recognition and attention and get a percentage of these funds when they come through. Agriculture has always been the backbone of Zimbabwe in terms of economic value, and it's going to take a long while before that changes, but the youth need to take advantage of the latest technology, the latest information, to make sure we do it better than ever before and make more profit.
That was Evans Zininga. Thank you for being with us. This is Chione Sojani, your host for Let Us Engage.
That was Bob Marley putting a lead to our show. But before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai fumes as local government minister suspends Harare mayor.
Opposition parties criticize President Mugabe for attending what they call a low-key UN event in New York.
The United States Agency for International Development has unveiled an additional $20 million for alleviating hunger in Zimbabwe.
That's our broadcast this evening. But before we go, Marvelous, what is the Live Talk topic today?
Chris, the Live Talk topic today, I think, is what is going on in the city councils around the country, where we saw today, like what we just said, Morgan Tsvangirai fuming over local government minister suspending Harare mayor.
That's it. That's it, Marvelous. That's it for tonight. Thank you so much. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.